In this fifth chapter, entitled Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness, or Karma Sannyasa Yoga, we have covered the first 11 verses. We saw that the second section, text 6 to 12, deals with the performance of Nishkama Karma Yoga. And the Nishkama Karma Yogi who performs actions knowing fully well that the Atma or the soul, although living in this body, is always aloof from the activities and workings of this body. Such a yogi who is situated on the spiritual platform becomes free from the entanglement of karma, action and reaction, which is the cause of our bondage in the cycle of birth and death. The last verse of this section, verses 6 to 12, that is section verse 12, is a summary of the previous four verses. And herein, Lord Krishna will describe the difference between the attached worker and the detached worker, more or less as a summary of this particular section of verses from verses 7 to 11. So let us briefly summarize before we go on what we discussed last time. We saw that a person who is situated on the spiritual platform, who is detached from the fruits of his actions, he is like the lotus leaf, Padmapatra Ivambhasa. Lipyate nasa papena, the sinful activities cannot touch him because he has become detached from the fruits of his actions. And with his body, with his mind and intelligence and all his senses, he endeavors simply to work for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord, being totally detached from the results of his actions. He acts only for the sake of purification of his heart, not for achieving some material motive. So now we come to text 12. So let us all chant text 12 together.
Yuktah karma phalam tyatva Shantimapnoti naishthikim Ayuktah kamakarena Phale sakto nibadhyate Yuktah karma phalam tyaktva Shantimapnoti naishthikim Ayuktah kamakarena Phale sakto nibadhyate.
The soul attains unadulterated peace because he offers the results of all activities to me. Whereas a person who is not in union with the divine, who is greedy for the fruits of his labor, becomes entangled. Kindly repeat, the steadily devoted soul attains unadulterated peace because he offers the result of all activities to me. Whereas a person who is not in union with the divine, who is greedy for the fruits of his labor, becomes entangled. So as in the earlier verses, Lord Krishna is distinguishing between one who is a yuktaha or a yukta yogi and one who is ayuktaha. Yukta means engaged. Engaged in establishing or in re-establishing one's relationship or link with God. That is ultimately what yoga means, coming from the word yuj. To be engaged in the linking process of devotional service. Prabhupada uses this phrase, linking process of devotional service, because devotional service or bhakti revives one's link with God, which has been broken from our side due to forgetfulness of God. And when we perform bhakti yoga, we revive that lost relationship. So here, firstly, Lord Krishna talks about the yuktaha, one who is engaged steadily in serving the Lord, or one who is a nishkama karma yogi. He is not attached to the fruits of his actions. He works only out of a sense of duty or love for the Lord. He understands that he is not the worker. He is aloof from the workings of his body. And such a person, what are his characteristics? Karma phalam tyaktva. He gives up attachment to the fruits of his activities. It's very difficult to do in this world, because we are always seeking some benefit from every activity we do in this material world. Nobody works without a motive. Nobody works without a plan. And that is also proper. We should always work with a motive in mind. One cannot work aimlessly in this world. But what Lord Krishna says is that even though you have a plan and a motive, don't be attached to the fruits of that particular endeavor. First of all, we should have the proper kind of motive. We should know what kind of motive to keep in life. Having understood that, one should work in a spirit of devotion, dedicating one's activities and the fruits of one's activities to the Supreme Lord. So the characteristic of the yuktaha is mentioned here, karma phalam tyaktva. He gives up this attachment to the fruit. And what happens as a result of that? Shantim apnoti naishtikim. He attains peace, lasting peace, unadulterated peace, Prabhupada writes in the translation. Or in the word-for-word meaning, he writes perfect peace. Perfect peace, unadulterated peace. Naishtikim, naishtikim, which is unflinching. Steady, which never fails, which never breaks. Such peace can be attained only after liberation. When one attains the liberated platform, one is totally liberated from the miseries of this world also. To be liberated from the cycle of birth and death means to be liberated from misery. So this is the condition of a yuktaha. And then next we have ayuktaha, one who is not so engaged in devotional service. One who is seeking profit, some material gain, adoration, distinction, puja, la, pratishtha in this world for the sake of sense gratification. And what is his motive? Kama karena, sense gratification. So the motivation of the two is different. The motivation of the devotee or the nishkama karma yogi is a sense of love and duty for the Supreme Lord. Whereas the motivation for a worldly person is kama karena, is desires for worldly enjoyment. That is what spur him on for more and more activity in this world. Phale sakto. And because of his material desires, he is very strongly attached to the fruits of his actions. And therefore sometimes, when he gets what he wants, and he gets some pleasure, he becomes very happy. And when he doesn't get what he wants, at the end of his labor, then he becomes very distressed. Now, and any intelligent person will understand that one may have some control over one's endeavor, although even that not completely. But one may have at least substantially some control on what kind of endeavor we can put in. But we will surely know that we do not have control over the result. We have seen this many times in these classes, that there are some superior powers working which actually control the result that will come out from our work. And this is a fact. Every one of us has experienced this. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Narad Muni gives a very wonderful analogy to illustrate this point of how the miserly conditioned soul in this world, miserly because he is attached to the fruits of his labor, Kripana. He doesn't want to serve God. He wants to enjoy for himself. So the miserly conditioned soul in this world is always going from activity to activity, seeking happiness, sometimes getting it and sometimes getting distress. Just like there is a dog, a street dog, who goes from place to place. He goes for a morsel or a scrap of food. Sometimes he gets it and sometimes he's shooed away. He is kicked away. People throw stones at him and he's shooed away. So in this way, just like that stray dog who sometimes gets what he wants, gets his morsel of food and sometimes is shooed away, similarly the conditioned soul in this world is forever in the cycle of birth and death, sometimes struggling and getting happiness and sometimes struggling and not getting happiness, getting shooed away from happiness. So this is a very wonderful analogy of the stray dog on the street. This is actually the humiliating condition in which the soul finds itself in this material world. The soul is meant for eternal joy in the kingdom of God. The soul is meant to live forever enjoying wonderful pastimes with Lord Krishna in the spiritual world. But simply out of a miserly sense of wanting to enjoy independently, of not wanting to serve the Lord out of a sense of ego, the Jivatma comes here into this material world and is reduced to the state of a street dog, who has to sometimes go here for a scrap of food and sometimes there. There is no dignity. In this world we see, who has dignity? Does anyone have dignity in this world? We may have dignity in one place, but not in another place. One may be a chief minister here and have a lot of power, but one may go to some other country and nobody knows. One sannyasi was describing how when he went to America and he was sitting in some temple, because there are lots of Indians there and many of them make temples for their own religious life. So a program had been organized for him in one of the temples. And he was sitting there giving his katha and several people had come. And then one chief minister from India, who happened to be visiting America at that time, he walked in to that temple, being in that area at that time. So he did not know that the sannyasi would be there, neither the sannyasi knew that the chief minister would come. And being from India and having been in touch somehow with the affairs of this country, he knew who is this person, that he is the chief minister of a particular state. But the others over there, non-resident Indians, they had no idea who this man is. So when he came, he just came with one person or two people, not with the usual security guards and all the sirens and all the things that go when a chief minister visits any city in his state. And the sannyasi was describing such a big man in his own country, but here nobody cared. Nobody even looked at him. Similarly, one may be a big officer in a company, especially say in a city like Bombay, he may be very, very big executive. He may have hundreds of people working under him. And it's a fact, and he may draw something like 50,000, 1 lakh, 2 lakh rupees salary. There are people drawing this kind of money. But they have to enter into the train, local trains, to travel to work. And there nobody cares whether you are an executive or whether you are a peon. You have the same treatment. You are pushed and squeezed and pulled and abused like anyone else. You have no dignity there. So in this world also, we may have our little sphere, small tiny sphere of influence, where we may think that yes, we have some dignity, we have some prestige, we have some name, people respect us, but we just go outside that sphere and everything is lost. And more often than not, even in our own sphere of influence, so many times there are problems. Take for example any minister, chief minister, prime minister. They are supposed to be very important people in the state or the country. But even within their sphere of influence, they have so many critics who make life miserable for them. In other words, nobody can find any position of dignity in this material world. It is not possible. One cannot live with dignity, and one cannot keep on offering dignity to others also. Therefore, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, this material world is no place for a gentleman. One cannot be civilized and cultured and dignified in this world. This world is a very harsh and harsh place. And it is not possible for one to be respectable in this world for long. So this is the condition of the ayuktaha, who is working simply out of sense gratification in this world. Of course, even a yukta who is in this world is subject to all the disrespect that comes by surviving in this world, but he is not so much affected by it. Whereas, the ayuktaha is very much affected. He becomes very sorrowful. Therefore, it is described here, nibadhyate. He becomes bound in the cycle of birth and death. So here we see the difference between the Krishna conscious person and between one who is materially motivated, who is not Krishna conscious. The Krishna conscious person engages all his activities simply for the satisfaction of Krishna and for no other reason, no other purpose he has in life. He understands that Lord Krishna is his ever well-wisher, he is his best friend, he is all-knowing, all-merciful, and simply by surrendering to him, all love, all peace, all happiness will be attained. So this is the process of surrender. He surrenders to the Supreme Lord and attains lasting peace. So here the word shantim has been used, which has been translated by Prabhupada as being lasting peace or unadulterated peace. In this world, it is not possible to find this kind of unadulterated peace. Sometimes, when two nations stop having war, then they are said to be at peace. Or when two people who were earlier fighting are now no more fighting, it is said they are at peace with each other. But such peace is not lasting in this world. Because always there will be some interruptions coming out of the three modes of material nature which will create problems. Anything that is based on the tottering platform of this bodily consciousness always is unstable. It will never sustain. So therefore we find sometimes there is peace, sometimes war, then peace and war. So it is not lasting peace. The only way we can attain real peace is to surrender to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. This is the only formula for peace. Later on in this chapter, in the very last verse also, we will see that Lord Krishna gives such a formula. Bhokta Ram Yajna Tapasam Sarva Loka Maheshwaram Suhridam Sarva Bhutanam Yatva Mam Shanti Mritchati. He says that one who understands me, that is Krishna, to be the Lord of the whole creation, the proprietor of everything, one who understands me to be also the enjoyer of everything, Bhoktaram, of all the sacrifices, austerities, everything we do, one who understands me, that is Krishna, to be the ever well-wishing friend of everyone, of all living entities, only such a person can derive lasting peace. So the devotee, the yuktaha or the yukta yogi, surrenders to Krishna, understanding this to be the only way one can attain peace, the only recipe for peace. Any other recipe is a sure shot recipe for disaster, for disturbance. So when the unadulterated peace is attained, in the translation, Prabhupada uses the phrase, a person who is not in union with the divine, for the ayuktaha. Not in union with the divine does not mean, as the impersonalists would think, of losing one's identity by merging into the impersonal aspect of the Lord, the Brahma Jyoti. That is not what is meant here by Krishna, obviously. Because Arjuna is asking questions about working. You cannot work when your individuality has been destroyed, when you don't exist anymore. You can only work when you have a personality. When you are a person, then you can perform some work. The devotee doesn't like the concept of merging into the oneness. As we see from the prayer of Hanuman, Hanuman prays to Lord Ram, "I don't want this kind of Sayujya Mukti, where the Atma loses its identity by merging into the impersonal aspect of your existence. Why? Because then I would not be able to serve you." Very simple. Hanuman's logic, the devotee's logic is very simple. He simply wants to serve the Lord. And any position or condition that is unfavorable for that, he rejects. He doesn't like it. So therefore, the union with the divine doesn't mean merging into the impersonal and losing one's existence. It means oneness in desire, oneness in love, oneness in service. This is oneness. What is Krishna's desire? Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. Abandon all varieties of desire, of dharmas, and surrender to me. This is Krishna's desire. So when we make our desire to surrender to Krishna, then it means that our desire is the same as Krishna's desire, which is that we should surrender to Him. So this is union with the divine, making our desire and Lord Krishna's desire the same. And it is in this stage of union of desire that real love, real happiness can flourish. Otherwise, there is no scope for peace or happiness in this life. So in this way, Lord Krishna has concluded this section, 6 to 12 of this verse. And now he will begin on the next section, text 13 to 17, in which Lord Krishna repeats a subject that he has already dealt with in chapters 3 and 4, which is, who is the real doer or the karta? Is it the jivatma? Is it the material energy? Or is it Krishna as the Paramatma or the Super Soul in the heart? Who is the real doer? Now Lord Krishna begins this section by first of all in the 13th verse talking about the position of the Jivatma. So let us discuss and chant first the 13th verse.
Sarva Karmani Manasa Sanyasyaste Sukham Vashi Naiva Dware Pure Dehi Naiva Kurvanna Karayan.
By Srila Prabhupada, when the embodied living being controls his nature and mentally renounces all actions, he resides happily in the city of nine gates, that is, the material body, neither working nor causing work to be done. Kindly repeat. Here is the formula for being happy again. Sarva karmani manasa sanyasyaste sukham. To mentally renounce the fruits of our actions. Ultimately, all desires for sense gratification simply arise like dreams in our mind, like bubbles or foams in the ocean, or like some castles in the air. These are all the desires for enjoyment in our heart. They keep bubbling up and up and up, and sometimes they burst. So in this way, mental concoction is the cause of the desires for sense gratification. And because of that, the living entity identifies with the body and is forced to act to fulfill these so many desires. However, if he renounces these, then he can be peaceful and happy. One who identifies with the body becomes miserable because then he gets affected by duality, the opposites. This car has been compared to an automobile or a, this body has been compared to an automobile or a car. Suppose somebody is driving his car and somebody, some motorcycle comes and dashes his bonnet. And the driver may shout, "Oh, my bonnet has been injured, my bonnet has been hurt," or "the car has an accident and the tire bursts." Then the driver says, "My tire has burst," or "my glass, my windshield has been broken." It's not his tire or his bonnet or his glass, it is the car's. But he's so much identifying with that body out of that car, out of attachment for that car, that he says, "My tire has burst." He doesn't have any tires. He has two legs. And they are fine. Nothing has happened to them. So similarly in this world, we are always thinking, "I am growing old, I am young, I am diseased, I am happy, I am unhappy." Because these things are attached to the body, not to the soul. The soul is totally aloof from all these conditions that pertain to the body. And here, we see the two words once again coming up, deha and dehi. Deha means body, and dehi means one who resides within the body. Who resides within the body? The soul. So here it is said that the jivatma is residing happily within the body for a person who is renounced from the fruits of his actions. This body is called puri. Puri means not the eating puri, but puri also means a city, like Dwarka Puri, Jagannath Puri, Mathura Puri. The word puri in Sanskrit also means city. So in this verse, the material body has been compared to a puri or to a city. In the Bhagavatam also it is mentioned, griham shariram manushyam. In the body is also compared to a house. Sometimes you take a house on rent and stay there for a few years, but you don't identify yourself with that body, with that apartment. Eventually you have to move out. So also we have to move out from this body after some time. And here the analogy is given of a city. It is like a person coming into a city and living there. The Atma in this way is living within this body. And what is the description given to this body? Navadware. This body or the city has 9 gates. So the material body is compared to a city that has 9 gates. What is a gate used for? To go out and come in, isn't it? So what are the 9 gates of our body? The 2 eyes, the 2 ears, the 2 nostrils. How many mouths? 1 mouth. But we talk as if we have 10 mouths and we hear as if we have half a ear. So 2 eyes, 2 ears, 2 nostrils, 1 mouth. That is 7. 7 gates in the upper part of the body, all located in the head part of the body. These are known as the upper gates. And then there are the 2 lower gates, the anus and the genitals, which are in the lower part of the body, which are used for evacuation and for procreation. So totally 7 plus 2, 9 gates this material body has. And at the time of death, the soul leaves the body from any one of these 9 gates. Just like this temple has some doors, here, you can only go out through these doors. You can't, there is no other way you can go out. So also the soul also goes out through the body through one of these gates, these 9 gates. And which of these gates the soul goes out through depends on what kind of activities that personality has performed in that life. A punyatma, one who has performed pious activities, will leave through the upper gates, through the eyes, ears, sometimes through the mouth, sometimes through the nostril, sometimes left ear, sometimes right ear. And those who are very sinful, their atma leaves the body through the lower apertures, the lower gates of the body. And those who are expert spiritually, and in the science, they can understand by looking at the body where the Atma has left from. And even by just understanding the activities of a person in his or her life, one can understand what would have been the destination. It is explained that just by studying a person's personality, character, activities, his tendencies, one can get a hint or an idea of what that person was in the previous life, and one will also get an idea of what he is going to be in the next life. Just by studying that person. So, the Atma is leaving its body according to the kind of activities performed. And there is yet a tenth gate actually, which is not mentioned here. Does anybody know about the tenth gate? Brahmarandhra. It is a small hole on the top of the skull. But normally it is closed. And we do not even know about it. It is so tiny. It's enough for the Atma to go out though. If the Atma has to go out through our mouth, we don't have to open our mouth wide. Because the Atma is so small. We have seen what are the dimensions of the Atma, 1/10,000th of the upper part of a hair. So the Atma doesn't need much space to go out of the body. And the Brahmarandhra is a small hole in the top of the head. And this exit is particularly used for very advanced yogis. Especially Ashtanga yogis who develop the siddhi or the power to leave their body at any time of their choice. And not only that, they also have the power to choose the destination where the Atma will go. For those of you who want to know more on this subject, you can read a very nice small book written by Prabhupada. Does anybody know the title of this? Easy Journey to Other Planets. It was the first small book that Prabhupada wrote in English actually in the 1950s. So, Prabhupada describes here how such yogis, they can control the life airs within the prana. They can raise the soul up and get the soul to leave from the top of the skull. And then it will go to either, if he wants to go to Swargaloka or Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, wherever he wants to go, he can go for a sightseeing tour. He can take birth there. Of course, if you ask people in India, they will not like to go to Swarga and they will want to go to America. So they will all say, I just want to go to America, I get visa. So, any case, this is our earthly Swarga. Everybody thinks all desires for material enjoyment will be fulfilled in America. Life will be successful simply by going there. So the yogis exit from the topmost platform. But for the yogis, they have to carefully choose the moment of their departure from this body. The 8th chapter in the Bhagavad Gita will deal with this subject. And Bhishma Dev, you know the story of how he died, how he left his body on the battlefield. Actually, Bhishma was a great devotee of the Lord, a pure devotee. And he was definitely destined for Vaikuntha, where only the pure devotees can enter. But he wanted to demonstrate the process of the Ashtanga Yogi. He chose the proper moments at which he should leave the body, as mentioned in the Shastras. He waited for the Uttarayan to come, and then in the presence of Lord Krishna and the Pandavas and others, he departed. And at the very moment of his departure, he was gazing at the beautiful face of Lord Krishna with great devotion. So Bhishma Dev, being a pure devotee, didn't have to wait for the moments that are considered auspicious for a yogi to leave his body. Whatever time a devotee leaves is auspicious. And then he will attain to Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. For those of you who have been attending the Ekadashi classes on the Sri Sampradaya and the Ramanujacharya past times, certain points came up. You will remember that Varadaraj answered Ramanujacharya's question. And he said that for a devotee, it doesn't matter when he dies. Or even ultimately whether he doesn't think of me when he dies. This might seem to be a contradiction because in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Anta kale cha maham eva smaran muktva kalevaram iha prayati samadbhavam yati nastyatra sanshayaha. That those who die thinking of me at the time of death, they will attain to me. So we may think that suppose someone dies in his sleep, he may be a very nice, sincere devotee, very advanced devotee also. but dies in a state of coma, or dies because of an accident all of a sudden where he doesn't have time to even respond or react and think of Krishna. So what happens to such a person? So Lord Varadaraj says, doesn't matter. I take my devotee back to Godhead anyway. Also you will remember that from Mahapurna's passing away, the great devotee Mahapurna, who was the guru of Ramanujacharya, Mahapurna passed away in the middle of nowhere. Their eyes had been plucked out by the cruel king Kulatunga. And both Kuresh and Mahapurna, being blind, they were stumbling along on the road trying to go back to their hometown, Srirangam. And on the way, because of the torture, Mahapurna, who was very aged, could not bear the pain. And he passed away right there in the middle of the road, in an alien place, far away from any holy place. And at that time, Kuresh was lamenting, oh, what a death. A great devotee like you is passing away in such an inauspicious place. At that time, Mahapurna was keeping his head on the lap of Kuresh in his last moments. And then Mahapurna says, why do you lament like an uneducated man? Don't you know that for a Vaishnava, the best place to die is in the lap of another Vaishnava or in the home of a Vaishnava, of a devotee of Krishna? And in any case, if you start lamenting, thinking that I did not die in a holy place, then people will think that even though they may perform devotional service, ultimately if they don't die in the holy place, all the devotional service is of no avail. So this will demotivate people. But the fact of the matter is that because a devotee is spiritually situated, is transcendental, so these laws do not apply to him. The laws of auspicious and inauspicious do not apply to a devotee. Because a devotee, being in touch with Krishna, is all auspicious. So whenever a devotee dies, it is auspicious. Wherever a devotee dies, it is auspicious. In whatever way a devotee dies, it is auspicious. It doesn't matter for a devotee. In this way, we know that although Bhishma Dev was a great devotee, he was not obliged to wait till Uttarayan to leave his body, but nevertheless he did so. A devotee actually doesn't have to wait for such auspicious timings, etc. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur also passed away in Calcutta. He could have gone to Jagannath Puri or Mayapur or Vrindavan, but he didn't. Because a pure devotee is not obliged by these material laws. So in any case, these are the various gates of departure from the human body, and the Dehi is residing within this Deha, this city of nine gates. There is a very beautiful and long story that appears in the Srimad Bhagavatam in this connection. Does anyone know what this story is? Story of whom? In this connection. In the connection of the city of nine gates. Puranjan, yes, the story of King Puranjan. Would you like to hear the story? It is a very, very long story, very complicated story, but we will try to make it very simple and brief. So many of the details will be missed out, but I would definitely recommend that everyone should open the fourth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam and read the entire story of King Puranjan. It's a very long story. There was a great king called King Prachina Barhishat, who was always engaged in fruitive activities, karmakanda. That means performing religious activities for some material benefit. Those activities are called karmakanda activities, because a certain section of the Vedas, called the karmakanda section, is devoted to such religious activities. And he spent a long time of his life doing all these things. One day the great sage Narad Muni came, and he felt pity on this king and was trying to educate him as to how it is more important for the living entity to perform devotional service than to do all these religious activities for the sake of sense gratification. So he told King Puranjan, King Prachina Barishat, that I will now tell you a story. It is a story of a great king called Puranjan. Actually, this story of Puranjan is none other than the story of King Prachina Barishat himself. But just the names are changed and descriptions are different. And only at the end, actually Prachina Parishat will understand, oh, he's talking about me. So he says, once upon a time there was a great king who was a great hero, very brave, all conquering all directions. His name was Puranjana. Now this story is an allegorical story. Allegorical story means it is a story that actually has some analogies. It is meant to illustrate with some examples, upama, drishtant. So Puranjan means one who enjoys within the puri, the body. So it refers to the soul. So Narad Muni is talking about the soul, but he says that there is a great king called Puranjan. So we should understand that here he refers to the Atma. And he says the Atma, or the king Puranjan, was moving here and there, looking for a proper place which he could make as his own home. He was wandering all over the earth, representing the Atma, wandering all over the creation, trying to find a suitable body in which to enjoy. And finally he came across a very beautiful city. And this city had 9 gates. In other words, the Atma comes now across the human body and gets a chance to occupy the human body. And he saw, oh, such a wonderful place. And he began to enter this gate. The gate had nice walls, that means the skin. It had nice parks, that means the hair on the body. It had nice towers, that means the raised parts of the body like the nose, etc. And in this way, Narad Muni goes on to give a very elaborate description. If I start that description, it will take us an hour. So you can read it in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So in any case, this city had all kinds of nice fragrant breezes and flower gardens. In other words, so many facilities for enjoyment. Because the senses are there which give us opportunity for enjoying. So all these opportunities were there. Sometimes pleasant breeze would come. That means an opportunity for enjoyment. And in this way, King Puranjan was marveling at this wonderful city that he had entered. And he was looking around here and there. And just at that time, he saw a very beautiful young lady who seemed to be going alone searching here and there. She had many servants with her, but she did not seem to have a husband. And it appeared that she was looking for a husband. So King Puranjan saw this beautiful young lady and he was wondering, who is this young lady going unaccompanied like this? And he saw that she was accompanied by 10 servants. So who is this young lady? This young lady is intelligence. The young Atma and intelligence. And there were 10 servants there. Who are the 10 servants? The 10 senses. Last two times we have been talking about the Jnanendriyas and the Karmendriyas. So the 10 senses were the 5 Jnanendriyas and the 5 Karmendriyas. And these 10 servants, each of them had hundreds of wives. So you can imagine, very large retinue. So who are all the hundreds of wives of each of these servants? The servants are the senses. So what do the senses have? Desires. On how many desires? Hundreds of desires, isn't it? So each of these 10 servants who were walking along with this young lady, they had hundreds of wives each, that means hundreds of desires. And then, curiously, there was a snake who was protecting this young lady. He had 5 hoods. And he was following the lady wherever she went. Who is this snake? The prana, the life air. There are 5 major pranas in the body. The air we breathe, it is gross air. But in the body, we also have certain subtle airs, sukshma vayu, which is called prana. And there are actually 10 kinds of pranas, of which 5 are main, the major ones, like apana, samana, vayana, udana and prana. Prana was also a specific kind of prana. And these pranas are responsible for the functioning of various parts of the body. So one kind of prana is responsible for digestion, another for respiration, and so on and so forth. So these 5 pranas are there within the body, and the Atma is floating in these pranas. The yogis, by the practice of Ashtanga Yoga, they raise the Atma from among the pranas and they raise it up. Health becomes normal again. So therefore the five-hooded snake is a panch prana. The prana protects the Atma, isn't it? Till the last. In Hindi also they say, prana tyag diye. That means the life airs have gone. And when the life airs go, they also take the Atma with it in a subtle way. And this lady was looking here and there, and then naturally being a young heroic king, he approached this young lady and he proposed marriage. It's a long story, the proposal also is very long. And then she finally accepted and said, yes, who can reject the proposal of a very brave hero and a great king? So she accepted. And they started living together very happily there. And in this way, the king was living and serving this queen in a very nice way. Now she became the queen, so she was called Puranjani. And she was giving various kinds of enjoyments. And she was serving him in every way. And by that he became completely enslaved by her. He became bound by her. So much so that when she would drink, he would drink. When she would eat, he would eat. When she would stand, he would stand. When she would sit, he would sit. She would sleep, he would sleep. What does this mean? What is the analogy now? The Atma is situated in the mind, and the mind functions according to the actions of the intelligence. So whatever the intelligence says, mind does. We do. So queen represents the intelligence given by the Paramatma within. And Puranjan is the Atma or the consciousness. The intelligence cannot do without the consciousness. So therefore these two are there. And in this way the intelligence is used by the ordinary living entity to enjoy his senses. Isn't it? Even the alcoholic, he is always trying to use his intelligence. How to look for a nice good place where I can get cheap good quality alcohol. He is using his intelligence. How to bargain with this person? How to make this friend pay for my alcohol today? He is using his intelligence. How to bargain with this person? How to make this friend pay for my alcohol today? So even if it is very sinful activity, the person uses his intelligence for bad things, for enjoyment in this world. So now this intelligence was getting corrupted. So Puranjan was using the queen as a means of enjoying this world. And life was going on in this way. And the description goes on, and we will have to cut the description short and come to the end of the story, where one time, as you know, when there is a king and there is a kingdom, there are also enemies, and other kings also come and attack the kingdom. So one time there was an attack on the kingdom, and a king called Chandavega attacked. Chandavega means, Chanda means to pass, Vega means very swiftly. So what is it that passes very swiftly in this world? Time, very correct. So King Chandavega attacked this city of nine gates, Puri, in which Puranjan and Puranjani were staying. And time is attacking every one of us, isn't it? Relentlessly. And this Chandavega Raja, he was a Gandharva, coming from Gandharva Loka. And he had 720 soldiers with him. What do these 720 soldiers represent? The 360 days and the 360 nights in the year. With every passing day and every passing night, we are becoming younger and younger, correct? No, older and older. The time is having its impact. Time is passing very swiftly, and before we know it, so many years have passed. We often say in our daily talk, time has passed so fast. It just seems the other day, yesterday, that we went to such and such place together, on 1 year has gone by. So Chandavega, he passes very swiftly, he moves very fast, he doesn't wait for anyone. So Chandavega started attacking, and when he attacked, then at that time, the snake began protecting the city. Who is the snake? The five-hooded snake? the prana. So naturally the prana within the body comes to the defense of the body. And in this way, the battle was going on. 720 soldiers attacking relentlessly one after the other. And single-handedly the snake is protecting the city. But naturally when 720 soldiers are attacking relentlessly, what can one soldier, what can one snake do? So he was getting weaker and weaker and weaker. And at that time, another king, another lady had come. And this lady, she had been seeking a husband. This lady was called Jara. She was a daughter of Chandavega, of time. What is Jara? Old age. So she had a garland in her hand. She was looking for a bridegroom, but nobody is willing to accept and marry her. Who wants old age? Yes? If old age comes before us, my dear sir, my dear madam, please accept me. Who will accept? Say, no, 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 you don't go here, you come here. Don't go to my neighbor's house. Don't come to me. Nobody wants to grow old. So Jara, Narad Muni explained to King Prachina Parishad, that one day when I was in Brahmaloka, visiting my father Brahmaji, then this lady Jara, she came with a garland because knowing I'm a brahmachari, she thought maybe I'm an eligible bachelor for marriage. So she came and approached me. And I said, no, 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 how I can? I am a vowed brahmachari, I cannot become married. So I sent her to Yavanaraj, whose name was Bhaya. So she approached King Bhaya. Bhaya means fear. So she went and approached King Bhaya, saying, you are the best of the Yavanas, best of the untouchables. So as a great king, you must give me shelter and marry me. So King Bhaya was thinking, very dangerous, old age. So he said, no, no, I have an elder brother who is called Prajwara. So you marry Prince Prajwara. So who is Prajwara? The high 107 degree fever that comes at the time of death. At death, when one is in delirium, sometimes one comes into very high fever. You may have noticed sometimes in people talk in high fever, they talk in delirium. They will talk nonsense in high fever. So this fever is Prajwara, Vishnujwara. And temperatures can go up to 107 degrees and then the person dies. Just before death this comes. So then Jara got married to Prajwara. So finally she found a husband. So that means when old age, what comes along with it? When the lady is there, husband will also be there, isn't it? So husband means Prajwara will also come with old age. The fever, that means you are very close to death. And Chandavega was attacking. Therefore her name is also called Kala Kanya or Jara. She is the daughter of Kala or Chandavega. And then she started coming and she attacked. In the meanwhile, Chandavega's soldiers were attacking very ferociously. And now Jara also came in the picture. So all the more, everything became very difficult for King Puranjan. What to do in this body? Havoc everywhere. Soldiers on every side attacking. And then at this time, all the associates, the relatives of Chandavega, they also started getting disturbed. Who are the relatives? Actually from Queen Puranjani, King Puranjan had 1,100 sons and 110 daughters. And then he had many, many grandchildren. Representing what? Representing the actions and reactions of our punya and pap. So, in this way, so many reactions had to be enjoyed or suffered in this world. And all the citizens of this city, they were like the bodily limbs. So like the bodily limbs, they become weak in old age. They don't cooperate. So now the King Puranjan thought and saw that these are my family members and my associates and now they are no longer listening to me. When I was young and healthy, all my family members and my associates, they always obeyed my commands. And now I'm an old man and they are not listening to me. They are not cooperating with me. This happens in family life sometimes. And in the same way, we find that at the time of old age, the bodily limbs, the senses don't cooperate with one anymore. The eyes cannot see properly. The ears are not able to hear properly. we want to get up, but the hand, it is difficult to move the hand and the legs. So all the bodily limbs stop cooperating. And then King Puranjana was becoming very disturbed. What to do? There was panic in the city. But Chandavega was continuing his attack. And Kalakanya came there along with Prajwara. And finally, then snake, the prana, was bound by the agents of Chandavega. And Prajwara and Kalakanya also came. And then they dragged out Puranjani and also the snake. And they went out screaming. How does one die in this world? We die in agony, isn't it? Oh, I don't want to die, I don't want to die. Nobody likes to die. We all have so many unfulfilled plans. But nevertheless, Chandavega will come. He will come and tie us and pull us out of this body. And then feeling very, very sorry, he was pulled out of the body. And then Prajwara burnt the city to ashes. That means the dead body is destroyed after Puranjan or the Atma leaves the body. The city of nine gates. In this way the story was described. And Narad Muni went on to describe so many further wonderful aspects of this in more detail. So when you read this story actually in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will see what a wonderful analogy it is of the whole human system and how the conditioned soul in this world lives within this body enjoying. And that time all the associates tried to run out through the gates, but they were stopped by the soldiers of Chandaveda. Just like all the diseases, they come in the nine gates at the time of old age. The eyes, the ears, the mouth, everywhere, and the nine gates are blocked by disease. And finally, Chandavega will come and pull us all out. So one who is attached becomes very difficult for him, and he has to pull out, he lives in panic in the time of old age and disease. But one who lives guided by spiritual intelligence, by pure intelligence. In other words, King Puranjan, had he lived a life of Krishna consciousness with Puranjani, then things would have been very nice. But he lived a life of sense enjoyment. In other words, when one is guided by spiritual intelligence, Krishna conscious intelligence, then even though one will eventually have to leave the body, but there will be no panic, there will be no fear. At that time, bhaya cannot come. And one lives happily even within this body. And after this body is destroyed, one goes straight to the spiritual world, the kingdom of God, to live forever thereafter. So this is the story of the Navadvara Puri, the city of nine gates. So I hope you will remember this story of the city of nine gates. It is nothing but not only the story of King Puranjan, not only the story of King Prachina Bahishat, it is the story of every one of us. It is our story. So we have to remember that we are Puranjan. So now we have to change our mentality from serving the senses and serving the world to serving the Supreme Lord Shri Krishna and becoming eternally happy. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thank you very much. Now there will be darshan, and then after that there will be prasadam for everyone. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Prabhu, you said about this, you can have the right motto and
motive.
You can have right motto. And what sort of motto we can have? Like you said, ultimately the desire, according to Krishna's desire, everything happens. So, can I explain this?
Right motive. Motive means our purpose, our desire. We should have the right purpose for working. Our purpose for working is simply to please the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, to satisfy Him, to fulfill His desire. That should be our motive if we want to make our life successful. As we mentioned, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita what His desire is. Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. That's very clear. Krishna wants us to surrender to Him. That is His desire. So we should make that our desire also. we should also desire to surrender to Krishna and to serve Him. That should be our motive. Then our life will become perfect and we can attain ultimate happiness and joy. Any other questions? Stands for opulent. Srimat means that which is opulent. So that which is the opulent, wonderful, joy-giving Bhagavad Gita.
Prabhuji,
Hare Krishna.
Prabhuji, how are thoughts generated?
How are thoughts generated? From the storehouse of the mind. The mind is a reservoir of all kinds of desires for sense gratification. It is a reservoir of all kinds of experiences of this life and of all previous lives that we have lived in this material world. But those experiences are in the subconscious memory, so we don't have conscious memory of those things. But nevertheless, it is there. And from that storehouse, the bubbles keep coming up, the thoughts keep coming up. Ultimately, the Atma is responsible, ultimately, in the sense that because the mind is also a material object, it's a subtle body. And it's also existing and able to function because of the existence of the soul. But in the material world, it is just the mind, the material intelligence, that are actually cooperating and working in order to fulfill the desires of the senses. So thoughts are now being generated from the mind. The mind is creating all these thoughts. I want this ice cream, I'm passing by, I want that ice cream. That cinema, I want to go to that cinema.
Prabhuji, but except the soul, all other things are like, they are chemicals. Chemicals cannot think, so it's ultimately the soul that thinks.
No, everything is not chemical. Subtle body is not chemical. Only the brain is chemical, but that's a part of the gross body, not the subtle body. The subtle body is mind, intelligence and false ego. That is not gross. It is not chemical. It is very subtle. Any other questions?